Gabrielle is a doctoral candidate right now at Ben-Gurion University, and she already holds a BA in cultural studies, a BA in social work, and her MA in Jewish studies. She's a very busy student. She's already for over 10 years been a researcher and lecturer about the various sectors and subdivisions of Israeli Orthodox Jewish society and the history of Orthodox Jewish life, with an emphasis on the history and legacy of Polish Hasidic courts. She's the co-founder of the Polish Tisch, a unique international project exploring the history, teachings, and the religious and intellectual legacy of Polish Hasidic communities through bi-weekly 90-minute interactive lectures in English via Zoom. Thank you so much for being here today, Gabriella.
Thank you so much for you also for joining. And I hope you will enjoy the class. Thank you so much also for Professor Seidman and Dr. Ilan Fuchs for their amazing classes before me. And also Professor Seidman is one of the probably the top scholar about the Beis Yaakov movement in the world today. And her mother is almost 100 years old, and she's, I think, that the oldest living Beis Yaakov teacher. So, the place where she studied to be a teacher, we will actually discuss today in our program, because today's program is about Jewish geography. But it's not a simple Jewish geography. It's Orthodox Jewish geography and the Jewish geography of the Beis Yaakov schools in Eastern Europe between the two world wars. And we could see very, very interesting phenomena about these schools. We could see that there are certain areas that almost in every small town, there is a Beis Yaakov. And in other regions, which have a very, very significant Jewish population, even Orthodox Jewish population, the Beis Yaakov schools are almost non-existent or even non-existent. So what is the reason for that? What do you think? So for that, to answer to this question, we need to map out these particular Orthodox Jewish communities in Eastern Europe. I'm talking about Poland, Lithuania, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Hungary, and so on and so forth. And we need to see what type of Orthodox streams are the most prevalent in these areas, who are the leaders of these communities, how they are connecting to Orthodox organizations, for example, to the Agudas Israel, and how much are they flexible to modernity, women's Torah study, and the like. So when we are opening up these maps where these Beis Yaakov schools are listed, and they are listed from 1931. So actually, when the World War broke out in 1939, there were much more schools than they are listed in the map, the two maps, which I will show you. These two maps actually coming from the central office of the Beis Yaakov schools, and 1931, I mentioned, they are handwritten. And we also need to take it into consideration that they are listing the towns or cities where the schools are located in the local name. So the certain Romanian schools will be listed with their Romanian name, not with the Yiddish name or the Jewish name. So when we see a place named Cernauti is the Romanian name, but in Jewish consciousness, this is Chernovitz. So it could be certain differences. Also, many Lithuanian towns we will see listed with their Lithuanian name that probably we never heard about them I'm absolutely sure that everybody here heard about Kovno, but I'm not sure that that everybody could say that this is the city which is called Kaunas in Lithuania. So I will also translate for you to the regular Jewish names. And it's very important to take into consideration the border changes, especially the border changes after the First World War, which totally messed up the maps and many times even the identity of Eastern European Jewry. So if we can see the first map, I would be very, very happy and very thankful to Shira. Thank you so, so much for showing us the map. So what we can see? We could see very, very small Lithuania, and we could see a relatively huge Poland. So we also need to talk about it, that after the First World War, certain parts of Lithuania became part of Poland. For example, Vilna, the legendary town of Litvish Jewry, in the name Vilnius, became a Polish town. Today, again, we have independent Lithuania, as they had between the two world wars, and the capital city is Vilnius. But it was not like this after the First World War. The capital city was Kaunas. And Vilnius became a Polish town, a North Polish town. Also, Poland got from the Austro-Hungarian Empire in the past this huge area, which is called Galicia. And Galicia is very much part of Jewish consciousness and Jewish history, but it ceased to exist as an independent entity for a long time, and but in our Jewish history classes is very, very important. And if I tell you place names like Lizhensk, like Zhykov, like Ropshitz, Sanz and Bobov, even Husiatyn, Kopishnitz, or for example Chortkov, these are all Galician cities. One of them in the west, one of them on the east. In those times, it was part of Poland. And the Beis Yaakov schools were also spreading out in Galicia. The first Beis Yaakov school, founded by Sarah Schneerer in 1917 in Krakow. And it became a tremendous success after a very, very short while. And the Agudas Israel movement, the Orthodox Jewish umbrella organization, international organization, which founded in Katowice in 1912, actually seen the importance of Orthodox Jewish women's education and the Beis Yaakov schools, and the Beis Yaakov schools got under the umbrella of the Aguda. And of course, with the help of the Aguda, more and more and more and more schools could be founded. And also more and more schools get opened outside of the border of Poland. Since in the Aguda, there are activists from Germany, Kirshian Neo-Orthodox, Polish Hasidim, Lithuanian Talmidei Chachamim. So this is really an international organization. Even in the United States, Aguda is very active. But the first place is Krakow. After Krakow, certain schools opening up in the area. Obviously, in the capital city of Warsaw, there are also Bezdjakov schools. And also in other big cities like Lublin or Lodz, for example. And we could see that in 31, you see these small points in the map of Poland. And they are all Bezdjakov schools. Most of them are like after schools. The girls are going to regular schools since there is mandatory education in Poland. And after their school day finish, they go into the Bezdjakov and studying Lingde Kodesh. But there is a huge demand for the Bezdjakov and this type of education. And there are also teacher seminaries opening up, one of them in Krakow. You could see the bigger points, Krakow in the south. Then you are going more up. This is Lodz. And in the center of the Polish map is Warsaw. So what can we say about these big cities? I would like to say something about Lodz. Lodz is a very important industrial center. It's also called to be the Manchester of Poland. Why it's called to be the Manchester of Poland? Because industry, especially light industry and the textile, this is the major profile of the city. We could understand from that that there are a lot of factories and also a certain type of Jewish working class gets developed in this place. There are Jewish industrialists, even Hasidic industrialists who are owning factories. Some of them are bigger ones. Some of them are smaller ones. But there is like a Jewish upper middle class and even a Jewish bourgeoisie. And there are a lot of poor Jews. For example, in the district of Balut, they said that the district of Balut is like really the embodiment of poverty. And that's a Jewish neighborhood. So one of the goals of Sara Schmierer and the Bezdjakov teachers also to get out the girls from these factories. Because if the girls do not have a higher education, they do not have a profession, where they will end up? They will end up in the factories, working three shifts, extremely hard life. And of course, if you have this extremely hard life in the factories, very, very, very high chance that the Bundes or other socialist movement will get you because the circumstances are so hard. So for the women, it's even better not to get there. It's also hard for the men. They have the Poalei Agudat Israel, the workers' movement of the Aguda, but for the women, it's better not to. There is also an organization, School Types, which is called Ohel Sara. Ohel Sara are vocational schools where girls can learn bookkeeping, typing, sewing, so on and so forth. All of these useful professions. In the 1930s, there were already 30 Ohel Sara vocational schools. And since when we see in the map of Poland, we could see that we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6 Bezdjakov schools in Lodz. So my question is, it's only a question because I don't know it for sure, that how many Ohel Sara schools we have in this 5. Probably we have to 1 or 2 because Lodz is such an industrial city and they definitely need this type of school there. There is also a phenomena that Bezdjakov girls who finish the seminary and they are very, very enthusiastic, Many times they are traveling in Poland, traveling back to their own small town, and they start to speak for the women's groups, the ladies groups, and they really enthusiastic to set up a Beis Yaakov also in this place. And many times this is how it end up. And in Poland in 1937, 2 years before the Holocaust started, there were 250 Beis Yaakov schools in Poland with 38,000 students. This is enormous. This is enormous. If we are comparing it with Lithuania, Lithuania, which is also very much a center of Torah, in 1935, there were 16 Beis Yaakov schools only and 2,000 students. So the most populous place among Beis Yaakov students is definitely Poland. If we see other vicinities, for example, Warsaw. Warsaw, after the First World War, became a Polish Hasidic capital. Many of the rabbis who before this great war, they lived in small towns intentionally. Actually, the front destroying their courts, destroying their lives. So they feel safer in the big city. They move into Warsaw. They opening up their courts in Warsaw. For example, the Novominsk Rebbe, also the Piasecki Rebbe moves to Warsaw. But there are also others who are staying in their smaller places. But Warsaw is definitely a great Orthodox Jewish and Hasidic hub. And for sure, the Beis Yaakov schools are also flourishing here. Who are the biggest supporters in Poland of the Beis Yaakov movement? We could say, of course, from the Hasidic side, we have the Imre Emet of Gur, who from the beginning was a great supporter of the movement, and also the Chafetz Chaim, who ends up in Poland and part of the Lithuanian Talmidei Chachamim. There are other courts who are very supportive, and there are others who are more reluctant in the beginning. I heard it from descendants of Alexander Hasidim, that in the beginning, Alexander Rebbe, the Tiferet Shmuel, who was the third Alexander Rebbe, if I'm not mistaken. So he was kind of reluctant about the Beis Yaakov schools because Alexander was quite of an anti-modern community, but in the other hand, very accepting for all different type of Jews. But since women education, Jewish women education for them was like a sign of modernity, in the beginning, they were less supportive. This is what I heard. I never seen it written. But afterwards, they seen that it's really strengthening Orthodox Judaism. They did support the movement, and we could even see that there is a Beis Yaakov school in Aleksandrow, which is the Polish name of Alexander. Afterwards, we could see names here in the map that are actually names of various Hasidic courts. For example, Henshin, Gora Kalvaria, the famous Gur. We also see here Mogle Initsa, Otvot.
Gabriele?
Yes.
Hi, sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to give you about a 5-minute warning that you want to switch to the other map.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Skierniewicz, Sokachev, Sokolov, these are all places that they have their own Hasidic court and their own Hasidic Rebbe, and they also have their own Beis Yaakov. There are also places which are very, very enormous Orthodox Jewish presence, For example, Pabianice, close to Lodz. We could talk about Sokachev, Sosnovyets, the industrial city of Sosnovyets. Absolutely, they have Bezyakov schools. Although if you are going to Galicia, which is a different setup, like central Poland, we also see names like Gorlice, Lanczuk, Rzeszow, which is the famous Rajsza, Przemysl, which is Przemyślan, Przeworsk, also Lizhensk, Buchach, very, very much like famous Jewish names in Orthodox Judaism. And also from this map, we could see basically what the Jewish world lost and what type of renewal and what type of renaissance started in the end of the 1910s after the First World War, during the time of the First World War. And it just had a very, very drastic, tragic and brutal end. If we are talking about Lithuania here, we also need to see that in that map, we don't see, not in the list and not in the smaller map, the city Vilnius. Okay, we could say that we don't see in the smaller map because Vilnius is not part of independent Lithuania. Where are the Bezyakov schools in Vilna? This is also a question for me. I need to double check that there were no Bezyakov schools in Vilna. This is what I actually found in certain sources. But what I can say for sure that in 1931, there were no Bezyakov schools in Vilna. It could be that in the next 8 years, they opened up something. But it was a competitor actually in Vilna, which was called Jovne, the Jovne school system for girls. It was also very scholarly, very Torah-based, but they were even more including secular subjects than the Bezyakov. So we can see three circled red points. And one of them in this triangle in the north is Tel. Lithuania named Telšė. Afterwards, in the other side, we see Ponovič, also with a Lithuanian name that I could not pronounce. I'm very, very sorry. And in the bottom of this triangle of the three reddish circles, this is Kaunas or Kaunas, which is, I think, that the oldest city of Lithuania, also a major Jewish center with the Yiddish name Kovno, probably known by almost everyone. And very interesting, all of these places have very famous yeshiva, the Telz yeshiva, the Ponovich yeshiva. The Telz yeshiva actually transferred to the United States, to Cleveland, Ohio, the Ponovich Yeshiva with Rav Kahneman transferred to Bnei Brak, to Israel, and the Slobodka Yeshiva is a little bit less prevalent. So today it still exists in Israel, but it doesn't have so much of a very high and a large student base as they had in the 1920s, 1930s, even before. So why I talk about Slobodka? I have to talk about Slobodka because Slobodka is actually an outskirt of Kovno, an outskirt of Kaunas. And it's a very, very scholarly city. We could see in smaller other cities that we almost couldn't read the name. They're there is one that is called Mariampol in the south. There is one that is called Keidan or Keidani. This is the place where the wife of the Gra, the Gaon of Vilna, came from. And also we could see here in the very, very north, in the very top, a place that, again, the Lithuanian name is Shuali in Jewish, and Yiddish name is Shovel or Shovel. And Shovel was a main commercial center, main Jewish center, and very, very, very famous people came from there. The most famous of them is the Eliashiv family. Also, Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, a major decisor of Halacha from Yerushalayim, who lived a couple of years ago, he was born in Shovel, in that very place, and his grandfather, Shlomo Eliashiv, or other name, the Leshem Shvo Ve'achlama, was the famous Mekubal, the famous Kabbalist of Shovel, and they also called him the prince of the hidden part of the Torah, and he was one of the major theoreticians of the Lithuanian Kabbalah, the Lithuanian school of thought, mystical school of thought. A very, very interesting personality. And 2 years before his death in 1920s, the whole family moved to the Mandate of Palestine and settled in Yerushalayim with the help of Rav Kook, who was the student of the grandfather. So these were these communities that I wanted to introduce you in Poland and Lithuania, where the Beis Yaakov schools are very active. All of these places have a very, very strong Aguda presence. So basically, not so much question about how Beis Yaakov would develop or not develop in Poland and Lithuania, because most of the rabbis are very supportive of this movement. But if we are moving to another map and to other geographical locations, we could see that this is actually not all the time true.
Gabriela, before I move to the second map, there's one question maybe
can answer. Absolutely.
Someone asked, were there more women than men working in the factories, making the Beis Yaakov movement and the Aguda more fearful that the Jewish women would join the Bund and become irreligious than the men would?
I don't know actually the gender quantities here. Probably more men were working in the factories. This is what I think. But I think that the perception was like this, that for women, get into the hard life of the factories is more dangerous than for men. Also for the hardship, leaving the family, and also the various agitators of the other movements that they were really fearful about. And in those years, it was still an opportunity to work as a seamstress privately or a hat maker, and they could make a decent living. But if they did not have these skills for these trades, it was impossible to go into these professions. So that's why I see also a very, very big positive effect of this Ohel Sara schools, because they actually catering for a real problem.
I'm not sure about the second part of the question. I guess you answered it about joining another movement. Yeah. And then
it was a constant fear. It was a constant fear. And actually these movements were extremely appealing because the life of the working class and also the life of the poor society was so, so terrible that we cannot really imagine it. Like sometimes in one room, 9 people were sleeping. And many times, 1920s, 1930s, you could read in the memories, either religious or secular, that the kids wore the clothes of each other, one after the other. Maybe it's not that tragic, but when they had one pair of shoes for 5 siblings, this is really bad. This is really problematic. And unfortunately, these type of things also happen. I don't say that in every family, but these type of things are happen. And of course, if we are living in this type of conditions, the Bund and the socialist movements and the communists are much more appealing.
Shelley, does that answer your question? You can unmute if you'd like to clarify.
Yes, it does. Thank you. But there's a parallel question, and the parallel question is there were people, there were Jewish families, especially in the cities, who had a little money and sent their daughters to the gymnasiums, and their daughters did not want to marry from guys. And is that why the Aguda backed the Beis Yaakov movement, so that they could try to keep these girls from being influenced by the gymnasium?
It's an excellent question. I really love this question. This is also a major reason why the Aguda is backing the Beis Yaakov schools, since there is a big disparity between the girls' education and the boys' education. Many times they're living in two separate worlds. The girls sometimes speaking high Polish. They reading Mickiewicz. They can play Chopin on the piano. And these boys barely know how to speak the language of the country. They speak Yiddish and they studying Talmud. So this Orthodox family because how we will marry these boys up to these girls. Many times these girls kind of running away to a more modern culture. And Sarah Schneerer, who was an excellent sociologist in my eyes and sociographer, she even wrote in her diary that when the men are leaving and going to the Rebbe in Rosh Hashanah, we are alone. And they have basically fun. And what we do have, we are going to the shul, there are the old ladies, and the old ladies have their old-fashioned practice-based Judaism. And the young generation of girls who are educated in the gymnasia, they are driven by their passions. They're interested in beauty, they're interested in art, they want to go to dance, they want to go to the theater, they want the joy. And they are kind of moving away from Orthodox practices because of that. So we need to educate these girls. And we need to give them intellectual content even to see that Judaism is worthwhile. It's a valuable. This is a type of life that worth living. That there is beauty in it. There is intellectual inquiry in it. There is meaning in it. And this is a huge problem, and the Beis Yaakov schools are definitely giving an answer to that. And and the Imre Emet of Gur, he was very, very respecting Sarah Schneerer, and he said that if not for her, to whom my Hasidim could marry? So it's very interesting. In the interwar period, it was definitely a big deal and a big question.
We have one more question. I don't know if it's on the map, and I'm not sure I can pronounce this city, but Siloai is getting close to the Latvian border. And the question is there anything which is in Latvia today?
I think that this city is still Mamesh, Lithuania. This is the city of Shavuot in Jewish name, what I was talking about. But I just check it right now. If you want, there is this place right now situated. I'm absolutely sure that it's Lithuania still.
Okay. Can I switch to the next map for when you're...
Absolutely. Absolutely, please. And we will get back to...
Hadassah is confirming that you are right. It is in Lithuania.
Okay. Yes, it's near the Latvian border. Exactly.
Okay. So, and you can go on.
When we see the next map will be really, really, really eclectic because we are going from Vienna until Bukovina. Bukovina is again like this type of legendary Jewish territory that maybe we read about it in the novels, doesn't exist anymore. But it had a lot of Vesyakov schools. We could see in the map of Romania, the area of Maramaros also had two Vesyakov schools, which was true for 1931. And also closer to Hungary, those parts that it's more closer to Hungary and called Partium, also had one Vesyakov school in Oradea. What is very interesting for us that we see this roundish, reddish circle in Vienna. Yes, in Vienna there is a higher school, a teacher training seminary. Vienna is very, very instrumental in the history of Vesyakov, because Sarah Schmierer, during the First World War, spent considerable amount of time in Vienna. And this is the first time that she's encountering with something that women could study more Torah and Humash. And it really resonates with her ideas and soul. And also this whole Hirshian movement, Torah in Derech Eretz, and is definitely getting very inspiring for her. Vienna is a much, much more interesting city in terms of Orthodox Jewish communities already in the First World War and after the First World War than it was before. Because it's getting a wide range of communities that they did not exist in Vienna before. Okay, who are moving to Vienna after the First World War? Heads up. Okay, so I tell. Many of the rabbinic figures and leaders of the Golden Dynasty of Ruzhin, like communities like Sadigura, Chortkov, Kopishnitz, they are moving to Vienna. Why are these leaders moving to Vienna? Because their communities and their cities or small towns, they got destroyed and they're running away from the front. And many of them are even staying in Vienna. So Vienna, because of them, get a very high influx of Galician Jews. And this is actually changing the map of Orthodox Jewry a bit in Vienna. We also see next to Austria a very interesting entity, which is called Czechoslovakia. It doesn't exist anymore, because there is Czech Republic and Slovakia. After 1990, there were even changes in the middle, but I'm not going into that. we could see that the Beis Yaakov schools are especially existing in the Slovakian part and not in the Czech part. I don't see any Beis Yaakov schools in Prague, not in Brno, and not in other Czech cities. But in Slovakian cities, there are Beis Yaakov schools. So what was Slovakia before the First World War? This part of Slovakia was part of Greater Hungary, as much as part of Romania was part of Greater Hungary. Hungary was the biggest, we could see, victim or loser of the First World War, because almost 70% of its territory went to neighboring countries because of the Trianon Peace Treaty. So many of the Jews of Slovakia are not speakers of the Slovak language, but they are speakers of the Hungarian language. And many times they are identifying either as Hungarian Jekes. There is a community like this in Presburg, which is called to be Bratislava, the city of the Hatam Sojfer and his descendants, or they identifying as Hungarian Jews. For example, in Galanta, for example, in Topolcsán, in Eperjes, and almost all of these places getting a Slovakian name. Okay.
Can I interrupt for a moment? Yes. You know, I don't know if you were, my mother was from Eperjes, which is Prešov, and they had,
yeah,
and she attended the, she had Beis Yaakov teacher there, and she was very eager to continue her studies. She was very academic, and apropos to the discussion about gymnasium, she asked her father if she could go to gymnasium. And he was very firm, and he first said yes, and then she was the youngest in the family, and then he had second thoughts and decided to send her to Beis Yaakov in Vienna. But after the Anschluss, the Beis Yaakov in Vienna moved to Pressburg, and there was a teacher's seminary in Pressburg, which my mother attended.
Really, thank you so, so much, Rivka, for the useful information. I would love to talk to you. Actually, this map is before the Anschluss, so we don't see these seminaries there. And thank you so, so much. It was so important for us to learn. And also, you are the first person from Eperjes that I ever meet.
Okay.
And I usually meeting from Jews from all over the places. It's really amazing.
I would love to speak to you, so feel free to reach out to me.
Wonderful, wonderful. And
Naomi Seidman has my contact information, so I'll write it down.
Great, great. So what we could see that almost all Slovakian Jewry is basically used to be Hungarian Jewry, but it's actually not completely united, not as Hungarian Orthodox Jewry, because we have the Oberland and we have the Unterland. So what's the mean Oberland? Oberland is more a Western type of orthodoxy. This is definitely non-Hasidic orthodoxy, but we couldn't say that they are like the Litvaks. They are not like the Litvaks. It's something, it's like an own breed. It's a own type. And Oberlandish orthodoxy after the Shoah, we could say it's really, really in downhill. Very few people identify with that. It was also very much part of a certain historical reality. But in Western Hungary or in Upper Hungary, most of the Jews were more Oberlander Orthodox if they belong to Orthodox communities. And many of these Slovakian communities were very, very Orthodox. Very close to Austria, in a map, we could see a place which is called Galanta. Galanta housed a big yeshiva. If I'm not mistaken, that was the Buxbaum rabbinic family. And students from all over Hungary sometimes even from the Carpathians, get into the Galanta Yeshiva. It had a very, very good name. Definitely, definitely Oberlandic style Orthodoxy, non-Hasidic.
One thing I would like to tell you, because my father went to the Galanta Yeshiva, really? And he loved it. It was really the preeminent yeshiva in Hungary of its time. But even though it was a very Oberland community, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rebbe, the Galanta Rebbe, who was also the Rav of the town, took on very Hasidic practices.
Really? Thank you so much for telling me this. And I see it in the chat that my father was a Maror Marosher, Siget. We will talk about Siget as well very, very soon. So it's fascinating. I'm very, very happy to hear about Galanta and Eperjes and all the Oberland, because it's kind of understudied today, unfortunately. We also have a place which is called Silény, and this is a Zsolna in Hungarian. It was also a Bais Yaakov school there. Again, one small problem with the map. When I looked for the places, I told myself, wait a second, all of these names are supposed to be Slovakian, Romanian, Hungarian, local names, according to the registration of the 1930s. I didn't find this name, Silény, in the Slovakian list, because here they forgot and they used the German name of the place. So that was the one mistake, or maybe one or two, but the drawer of the map made. If we are talking about the area of Prešov, Eperjes, and Košice, we are going and moving more to the east. So here we will have more influence of Unterland Jewry already. And Košice, or Kosha in Hungarian, is a very, very big city in eastern Slovakia. It's a huge Jewish hub. And what we can tell about this city, that all different types of Jewish streams are very strong in that place. Also the more modernist streams and also the more Orthodox streams. For example, the famous Jungreis family, that they originally from northeast Hungary, they also have a descendant and famous rabbi in Košice or in Kasha. And many Galicianer and Ukrainian immigrants getting into Košice, so they are bringing their own influences to the city as well. There are also very Western elements going to Kasha, Košice, because it's also a commercial hub. So it's creating a very eclectic type of Judaism. And even a Rebbe arrives to Košice, who is the Rebbe of Stropkov. And he even was buried there. Stropkov is an offshoot of Shinyava and Sanz. So they are connecting to the Halberstam family. So this is what we can say about Košice very briefly. If we are talking about those ones who are more on the right, this is real Unterland. We could see the names Užgorod and Hus. So these are real Orthodox Hasidic places. For example, in Užgorod, we could say that today is Ukraine, actually, the western part of Ukraine. Then it was part of Czechoslovakia. And I had the chance to talk to old survivors like 20 years ago, and even survivors who came from this area and they remembered many things from the 1930s. And they told me that under the Czechoslovakian rule, they found that it was like a dream. They really liked that regime. Definitely, they didn't like the Hungarian regime, which was afterwards in the interim period. And for sure, they didn't like the Soviet regime, because these places actually got to be part of the Soviet Union, Khust and Uzhgorod.
Can I interrupt with one piece of information about Uzhgorod, which between the world wars, it was called Ungvar. They had a Hebrew gymnasium, which was religious, which was run by, I think, Bnei Akiva. And all subjects, which it was a gymnasium with which one graduated, but all subjects were taught in Ivrit. My father was a graduate of that.
Also in Munkács.
The Munkács gymnasium was not Orthodox.
It wasn't religious. Exactly. In Ungvar, we also have a very, very famous personality whose name is Shlomo Gottfried, who was actually the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And this is a place not like Košice, not like Kasha, that here the modernist tendencies and the reform is not really acceptable. Zionist movement, yes. The various Zionist movements, yes, it is acceptable. So if we are moving down to Hungary, which is Hungary, which remained Hungary after the peace treaty, we could see something very strange. Only 1931, we could see the code, and in German, it says Schulen in Gründung. It means that schools in establishment. They did not establish. It means that 1931, that there is no single Bais Yaakov school in Hungary. And Hungary has a very, very, very big Jewish community. And probably it's like very well known that Hungary has many times extremist tendencies. It could be very, very extremist in the assimilation, in the reform. We could call it more neologue. And it also has their own almost militant orthodoxy. But why in a community that it has a population of almost every stream, and there are also middle of the way Orthodox communities, why there is no Bais Yaakov there in 1931? And why only in two big communities in Budapest and in Győr are thinking about to establish this school? What do you think? What is the reason? I really would like to ask you. Do you have an idea?
I think the rabbis were against it. The rabbis were against it.
There is influence in Hungary, in this remaining Hungary, also of those rabbis who are against it. But these very influential rabbis who are extremely against the Bais Yaakov school and the Agudat Israel itself, they don't live in the main Hungarian part. For example, the Minhas Eleazar of Munkács, he is in Czechoslovakia, according to the geography. And Rabbi Yoeli Teitelbaum of Satmar is having a community in Romania, according to the geography of the day. So they do have influence in Hungary, especially in the eastern parts. But their influence in Budapest, especially in Western Hungary, is not that big. So I answer to the question. The problem is with the Agudat Israel. Hungarian Orthodoxy, even though that they were not against the Aguda officially, and officially they joined the Aguda, the major Hungarian Orthodox organization, but they completely prohibited to the small communities and independent organizations to join the Aguda. They even prohibited that Aguda activists should come to Hungary and try to do propaganda for the Aguda. What was their problem? And many of these Orthodox leaders are in the same platform religiously as most of the Agudists were. So the whole question is, Hungarian Jewry was always a little bit stand apart and live apart. And they had this type of idea that we are not messing with the Hungarian authorities, Hungarian non-Jewish authorities. We not need an international organization amongst ourselves. It maybe could hijack our opportunities. We will manage ourselves, and we just don't need that. And there were actually independent organizations and grassroots aims to bring the Aguda to Hungary and make like more youth groups of the Aguda, so on and so forth. But it's basically never happened officially. It's only happened officially that the Aguda as an organization get active in Hungary. It's only happening after the Holocaust. In that tiny period that after the Holocaust and the communist takeover. And beforehand, there were certain officials that they want, and they want to bring Aguda activity to Hungary, and the major Orthodox office tells them, no, it's prohibited. Only in the 1930s, they becoming more light about it. And I think that this type of attitude we could see also in the establishment of the Beis Yaakov schools, because the Beis Yaakov schools are so, so much associating with the Agudat Israel movement. And also these two places in Hungary, that there is a Beis Yaakov in establishment within the years. One of them is in Budapest, the capital city, that there is an Orthodox Jewish variety of different streams. And the other one is Győr, is a quite affluent city in Western Hungary. And it wasn't so famous about the Orthodox Jewish scholars, that there were some, but it was a much more reformist community at large. But in the 1920s and in the 1930s, the Orthodox Jewish community is growing, the Snyder's rabbinical family is very, very much influential, as much as in the 1930s, they establishing an Orthodox Jewish beach where women and men could bathe separately in separate hours. Since the community is quite affluent, it has a relative closeness also to Austria and to Czechoslovakia, and it's making it an economical hub. It's also give us the way to think that since the community is affluent, they also had the assets to have this type of girls' school amongst them. Romania would be the most interesting, I think. How much time we have? Oh my gosh, I think I have the time, but please give me another 5 minutes.
Okay.
And we will finish with Romania. When I did this prepared for the class, I found out that the most interesting part could be Romania here. because it's so colorful. It's so not what we expect. So most of these places, which we see as Romania, they were parts of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, either as part of Hungary, Greater Hungary, or the part of Bukovina. So we see very close to the Hungarian border a place called Oradea, which is Nagyvárad in Hungarian. Nagyvárad was one of the biggest, most affluent, and most developed cities in Hungary before they actually gave it to the Romanians. Also, there are a lot of modernist Jews in Oradea, is a big city, but there is a considerable amount of Orthodox Jewish population as well. And guess what? A place that it wasn't so Hasidic, becoming quite Hasidic as well after the First World War, because the Ahavat Israel, Rebbe Israel Hager of Vizhnitz, moving there. And he held his court in Oradea, Nagyvárad. So it's kind of bringing a new type of Orthodoxy to this big city. We need to say that Vizhnitz is extremely influential in this Romanian area. And the Hagers are relatively moderate, and they are very much big supporters of the Aguda. There are even family members who are even closer to Zionism. Maybe not officially, but definitely is not an anti-Zionist Orthodox movement in the Munkács or the Satmar sense. Either they are very close to the Aguda, maybe 80-90% of them, and some relatives they could even have some affinity to the more religious Zionist streams. If we are moving up and see these names, Sziget, Visul, the Szusz, and Borsa, we are arriving to a completely different universe. And this universe is called Máramaros. Máramaros is really a very pastoral place in the geographical way, because it's by the Carpathian Mountains, a stunning view. A lot of people were very poor, living in small mountain villages. It's really amazing for contemplation and spirituality, but also they had a very, very hard life. And in Sziget, which is actually the capital of this Máramaros county, a very, very rich Jewish life develops. In terms of Orthodox Jewish communities, there is a tension between the Hasidim of Vizhnitz and the Hasidim of Sziget, the Teitelbaum dynasty. The Teitelbaum dynasty were always more militant. Also, Satmar is coming from the Sziget branch. And they had various misunderstandings between them. But my question is, if the Sziget court is so big in Sziget itself, why they are establishing a Beis Yaakov school? Very easy, because of the presence of Vizhnitz and also the presence of Krechnyan. And this is actually making the place more open to this movement and also to Aguda activities. Borsa and Felsővisel in Hungarian, they are also typical Máramaros communities, but the rabbinic leaders are not coming anymore from the Teitelbaum, but they are coming from Vizhnitz, and they are Hagers. We could also see names a little bit more on the right, like Sucheva and Radauti or Radots or Szeret, Vizhnitz. This is completely Vizhnitz area. Apart from this, that Rada Uti, also another branch of Hasidism, the Boyan Sadigura branch of Ruzhin appearing, they are also very, very supportive of the Beis Yaakov movement. And in Cherna Uti, which I said that that was the capital of Bukovina, and in the Yiddish Jewish name is Chernovitz, is one of the most important Jewish centers in Eastern Europe, and it has a very, very, very notable history. And also rabbis like the Be'er Mayim Haim of Chernovitz, it's something very characteristic, and the teacher training seminary of Chernovitz, Cherna Uti, really gave the Beis Yaakov teachers probably for all Romania. And Professor Zeidman's mother was studying in the Chernovitz Beis Yaakov teacher training seminary. One of the outskirts of Chernovitz is called Sadigura. So we could meet here names that that probably we heard before. And one last thing, of course, the Vizhnitz and Seret is coming back to us. And there is a place, it's called Sucheva or Shots in the Yiddish version. They also have Hagers, but they also have a Shotzer Rebbe from the Moshkovitz dynasty. But the most famous and most well-known Jewish Orthodox person who was born there is none else than Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro, who established the Daf Yomi and also Yeshivat Chachamei Lublin. His life story is fascinating. We could say that from a Romanian Hasid, he becoming a Polish stateman on behalf of the Agudat Israel. And also from a dyslexic child, he became a Rosh Yeshiva. In his short life, what he accomplished, it was something unbelievable. And of course, we could imagine that the Beis Yaakov movement will find a school in Shots in the birthplace of Rav Meir Shapiro. It's very, very logical. He is one of the major representatives of the Aguda. He is from Shots, from Bukovina. So obviously, the community is that type that it really needs a school to be opened there. And his life is also just representing that beginning of the 20th century Orthodox Jew who was born in Bukovina in the part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and becoming a rabbi in Galicia. In that time, also before the First World War, part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so he's not moving. And after Galicia becoming part of Poland, he's staying and he becoming a Polish rabbi, a Polish Aguda activist. And in history, he's listed completely as one of the giants of Polish Jewry, but actually, he was born and spent his childhood in Shots or Sucheva in Romania, in Bukovina. So thank you so, so much. Thank you for your patience as well. And I don't know, Shira, if we have time for questions, I will be very, very happy to answer them. Hello? Hello.
Gabriella, can you say something more about Yavne and how it came to be? Is it a rival of Beis Yaakov? How extensive was it?
I'm definitely not an expert on Yavne. I'm definitely not an expert on Yavne, but what I heard, actually, Rebbetzin Esther Farbstein she makes very, very extensive research on Yavne schools as well. What I think and what I heard that that it was, yes, it was kind of a rival of the Beis Yaakov. I think that it only existed in Lithuania in the beginning. And if someone could tell me more about the Yavne schools, I would be very, very happy about it. What I learned that they were even more scholarly oriented and more, even more keen on secular studies.
So that makes a lot of sense because the Yavne that survived and came to America came along with the Telsi Yeshiva, and they and they are definitely elite, much higher
elite,
level.
Very scholarly. And
Rebbetzin Osman allowed the girls to go to college along with seminary studies. Yeah.
But also one of the first teachers of the Beis Yaakov, they came from German background. And for example, Fräulein Doktor from England in the future, she had a doctorate from one of the German universities. And her help really needed to establish the teacher training seminar. So in the beginning, it wasn't like this. But Yavne was definitely more scholar-oriented. And also Lithuanian Jewry in many ways were more modern than Polish Jewry.
Thank you.
I missed who you said. Who were the rabbis in Hungary that were so opposed to the Aguda? What did it come from, the Teitelbaum family?
The Teitelbaums are very opposing to the Aguda, and the arch enemy of the Aguda is the Minhat Eleazar of
Minhat. Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. He even had a saying, Bar Kamsa. Who is the enemy? Bar Kamsa. What is the Bar Kamsa? It's an acronym. Bundistim, Revisionistim, Communistim, Mizrahistim, Zionistim, Agudistim. Aguda was an arch enemy. He actually quarreled with everyone, even with the living trees. When the Belzer Rebbe during the First World War, Rav Yitzchak Dov Rokach, moves to Munkach, he with him as well, and the Belzers were much more hardliner than the Agudas. For him, the Aguda was like Zionism or religious Zionism or even secular Zionism. He constantly attacked the Aguda by not attacking completely the Zionist movement. And he said, no, they say that they are anti-Zionist or non-Zionist. No way, it's a new form of Zionism.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Very, very extreme.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, my father was born in Kotsman in Klifodin, around Chernovitz.
Really?
He was born together with the two Vishnitsa Rebbes.
Oh.
After the war, they emigrated to Gross Vardan or Adia Mare. And then they met again with the same rabbi.
That's unbelievable. And actually, Katzman is in this map, and I think that they put it in the wrong direction, and this the other fault, like the other mistake that they made. The first mistake was the name of Silein Zsolna, that they used the German name. And the second mistake was actually Katzman. That it's close to Chernovitz.
Yeah, it's very close to Chernovitz. And my mother is from Zastrzana.
In the map is not. So this is the second mistake what they did.
Uh-huh. And my mother is from Zastrzana.
Wow.
Also around Chernovitz.
What type of communities did they belong to? If your mother...
Zastavna was highly Zionist. Shabbat on the street, they spoke only Hebrew.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. My grandmother was a widow. My mother became an orphan at 12 years old, or 13. And my grandmother had a butcher shop, a kosher butcher shop. So she had a Bachur Yeshiva staying by them and teaching five girls Hebrew. So all of them were fluent.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And your father, what type of community he grew up in, Kathy?
My father grew up in Cleveland, they were farmers. But his father was a Chortkover Chassid.
Chortkover, okay. Totally makes sense. Makes sense in this area. Even though Chortkov is a little bit further away, but it's the same branch of Chassiduyot.
So they came from Chortkov. They lived in Chortkov. Before that, the great-grandfather lived in Chortkov, and he wanted to buy a farmland to become a farmer, because in Poland he could not. So he moved from Galicia, he moved to Bukovina.
Wonderful. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing story. What is your name?
Chaim Fruchter.
Chaim Fruchter. Yeah, thank you so much for this fascinating story.
I have one more question. I'm wondering, Beis Yaakov came to America after World War I? Because the Aguda was somewhat here, and they were so afraid of assimilation, they didn't start a Beis Yaakov here, either the after-school kind or any other kind in New York?
I heard that there are Beis Yaakov schools in America, definitely. They are not so much associating with the Aguda as in Eastern Europe. And in the later 1930s, Rebetz and Vishnia Kaplan moving to America, and then she establishing a whole day Beis Yaakov school.
That's in Williamsburg.
Yes. But this was also before the start of the Holocaust, as I remember.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I was born in Siget.
Oh.
And they did have a sort of Beis Yaakov there, but more likely like a Talmud Torah style that we have here, meaning we had to go to public school in the morning. And in the afternoon, we had a few hours of learning. But Siget was an interesting city. You had a lot of modern groups there, and it was pulling from both sides. Even though I grew up in a Hasidic circle, but they were more modern groups. As a matter of fact, before World War II broke out, they had a gymnasium.
Even Munkach had a secular gymnasium, so the influence of this very characteristic people doesn't mean that everyone is the same in ideology. And some of the people are just more Zionist or more culturally Jewish. But
Yaakov wasn't such a high level.
I understand. And may I ask you that what was your family belong to? Were they Vizhnitz more or Kretschnya?
There is a breakout from Vizhnitz. It's called Antonir.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah.
So my father was an Antonir Chosid.
Really?
To visit. I remember it as a kid.
That's unbelievable. The Rebbe who actually martyred in the Holocaust because he did not agree that the community will go and he just escaped.
Antonia Rebbe, he was not a regioner?
No. Otenia.
No, it was Otenia, I think.
Hager, it's a Vizhnitz offshoot.
But the Vizhnitzers are also regioners from the original.
No, Vizhnitz is originally from Kosovo, and they did marry into the family of Rebbe Israel of Ruzhin, and there were marriages between them. The free Hagers quite often. As much that there were also marriages between the Hagers and the Horowitzes from Jacob and other Ropschitz lines.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. Thank
but
you.
But Vizhnitz is not like branching out from Ruzhin. There are marriages between the two communities, absolutely. And Otenia is from Vizhnitz. May I ask you your name? That you said that you are from Siget and you were Otenia Hasidim?
My name at the time was Feldman, Chava Feldman, but today I'm the Stritsky.
Wow.
I was lucky to leave a few weeks before the Germans came into Hungary, so I really didn't go through the Holocaust.
Oh, wow.
I understand.
And you are lucky.
Literally 6 weeks before.
Wow. And
you live in New York, yeah?
Yes.
I'd love to talk to you. I would love to talk to you. It's so
okay. You get so from fast. Them the connection.
Yes, yes.
Yes, sure.
How your name was listed?
Bystritsky, Chava Bystritsky.
Bystritsky.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay,
thank you so much.
Thank you
for
everything. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.